This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
So, Meghna, a question. You have a full-time job. You're a new mother. You've got lots to do. I imagine sometimes you look for ways to relax and de-stress. Have you tried meditation?
Actually, I have, Anthony, but I was pretty terrible at it because for some reason I felt like I didn't have the time or actually the discipline to really practice it the way you're supposed to.
Well, it's true. It does take discipline. And I ask because we're going to spend the next segment talking about some new and rather dramatic medical research that shows how meditation actually alters the structure of the brain in a good way.
That's right. And so to get the segment started, let's first get into the right space. So this is the Shambhala Meditation Center in Brookline. Over the weekend, our intern, Amri Sivertson, spent some time talking to people there about the benefits of meditation.
Hi, I'm Laura Greer. I'm from Watertown, Massachusetts. I've been meditating consistently for about a couple of years now, and the reason why I do it is that it helps me be more present in my everyday life and helps me ride the waves with a little more calm and steadiness.
My name is Bill Wooding. I've been practicing for 30-some years, and I'm a meditation instructor. And I meditate because it is a very trustworthy way to bring out great sanity within oneself and to be able to sustain that in one's life.
My name is Sarah Lipton, and I live in Jamaica Plain. I've been practicing meditation for 10 or 11 years, I think. And I think the real reason is that I've gotten to know my mind and heart, and there's a real sense of clarity in my life and space. I think that's opened up because of meditation. And when I don't meditate, I really know because my mind gets a little more crazy. And I think the final thing is that I've just seen how much benefit it gives me, and then I'm able to be of benefit for others in the world as well.
May all the excellent fruition of our aspirations be spontaneously accomplished quickly and effortlessly.
Some voices from the Shambhala Meditation Center in Brookline talking about the benefits of meditation.
Which we've known about for a long, long time. But what we haven't understood very well is how meditation actually affects the brain. Now comes new research that offers some answers.
A new study from Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School suggests that regular meditation actually alters those parts of the brain associated with memory, sense of self, empathy, and stress. It's the first study to document these kind of changes to the brain structure.
And here to talk about the study and to answer some of your questions is the study's senior author, Sarah Lazar of Mass General Hospital's Psychiatric Neuroimaging Research Program. And good to have you here, Sarah. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And I appreciate it. Also joining us, Raj Hooley. He's a PhD student who was a subject in the study. Thanks for being here, Raj.
Thank you for having me.
Look forward to talking to you about the effects that you got from meditation. Listeners, do you meditate? And if so, how has it helped you? And what do you make of this study that suggests that meditation is actually altering the structure of your brain? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Sarah Lazar, let me start with you. I just want to lay out very quickly for our listeners. Your study followed a group of people who participated in an 8-week mindfulness meditation program. It compared them to a control group who did not. What happened to the brains of those people who did the meditation program?
Right. So we've studied them with magnetic resonance imaging, which is a way of looking at the brain. And what we found was that certain regions of the brain had increases in gray matter density. And other studies have shown that changes in gray matter density occur when someone learns a new task and that these changes correlate with changes in behavior. Mm. And so what we found was that these regions changed, and they're in regions that are affecting functions that we think are affected by meditation.
So these regions where the gray matter was actually affected are associated with what in the brain, with what sort of characteristics or what functions or what sense of being?
Right. So one of the regions we found was the hippocampus. And the hippocampus is important for learning and memory. Another region that we found was the TPJ, which stands for the temporal parietal junction. And that's very important for being able to see things from someone else's point of view. Hmm. And that has been shown to be a very important part of empathy and compassion. And then the very interesting region we found was the amygdala. And the amygdala actually shrank. And the amygdala is important for fear and anger and stress. And so what we found was that the change in the amygdala correlated with the people's change in stress.
So it would actually, the amygdala would actually get, the gray matter in the amygdala would actually get smaller.
Correct.
Right. So what is this, what's the significance of this? I mean, we've known for a long time, of course, that meditation is beneficial, but it sounds like this confirms almost that the brain is flexible or elastic or something. How do you describe it?
Right. And I should say there's been many studies now demonstrating this, and changes can happen very, very quickly. They've shown in animals that you can get changes in hours in the brain. So the brain really is plastic. But I think what's important for this is that it shows that, because a lot of people say that meditation is just because people are relaxing, right? And that you get the same benefits from taking a nap. And this really suggests that there is a biological basis for why they're saying they're less stressed and why some of these other things that they report, that there's a real reason why those are happening.
Mm. And Rajuli, let me come over to you. You were a subject in the study.
Yes.
You hadn't meditated before, correct?
I'd not meditated too much before, but I've heard about it growing up in India.
Right.
And
so tell me the effect. So what was the experience that you had?
Well, if I had to summarize it in one line, it's a deep sense of well-being and calmness, inner peace. And that follows up with other stuff that we do day to day. You know, there is planning, there is stress that comes with working and doing daily activities.
Yeah. So it really made, have you continued to do it? I mean, in the wake of this study, have you continued to your practice?
Yes, actually, I have put it as a daily regimen now. Like every day, not every day, but every other day, I try to meditate and follow the instructions that I was given to follow just for 8 weeks, that I've been doing it for a year and a half now.
Wow. See, this is a question I wanted to get into. I mean, Meghna suggested at the top of the show that it's hard for some people to meditate. I've tried unsuccessfully. So, I mean, to get this positive result, did your study point to anything toward, you know, how much time does it take, for example, to get these beneficial results that are sort of organically visible in a brain?
Right. So we didn't see a correlation between amount of practice and the changes. And that's probably because although two people may both sit for half an hour, one person may spend a lot more of that time actually focused on meditation. Another maybe they sit for half an hour, but they're actually daydreaming for part of the time. So that's probably why we didn't see a strong correlation. Other studies with larger sample sizes, not looking at brain structure, but just looking at other outcome, have found correlations between amount of practice and beneficial changes. So there does seem to be an association between the more you practice, the more benefit you get.
The more you practice, the more benefit. Listeners, do you meditate? And if so, how has it helped you? And what do you make of this study that suggests your practice is actually altering the structure of your brain? You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. Let me bring one more voice into this conversation. It's Jim Gordon. He's the founder and director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in Washington, D.C. And we asked Jim, because among other things, his center is involved in something called global trauma relief, helping people in places like Kosovo, Gaza, and Haiti recover from the traumas of war and natural disasters. And among the tools you use, Jim, is meditation, right?
That's right, Anthony. And one of the things I think that's important is meditation is fundamental to all of medicine, or should be. The meditation and medicine come from the same Sanskrit root words, and we've forgotten that. And I think studies like this current one are critically important in giving. I'm a psychiatrist and a professor as well, so I know the importance of the scientific evidence, and this study is crucially important, and it confirms the kinds of changes that we see with people who've been deeply traumatized by war, by natural disasters. And in fact, what we've seen with people who use meditation as part of their healing program, part of the program we and those we train teach them, that even in the midst of ongoing highly stressful situations, and we've seen this in Gaza, where we've been working for a number of years, is that people continue to have relief from the symptoms of PTSD and from the symptoms of depression. And many of those people are meditating on a regular basis, as well as expressing and sharing their feelings.
Well, Jim, stand by there in Washington, D.C. I want to bring in some of our listeners who can give us a call at 800-423-8255. Jan is calling from Roslindale. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Anthony. I wanted to share that I have had a practice in meditation since the 70s. And 5 years ago, I had a rollover accident in which I broke my neck and sustained a brain injury. And the neurologist who treated me told me that they thought I had such a remarkable recovery in terms of getting my brain skills back again because I was a meditator.
Wow. Now, Sarah Lazar, you heard what Jan said. I don't know if this, I mean, does that surprise you? Is there anything in your research that that would explain this ability for the brain to bounce back like that?
Our research isn't quite that far along. I'm not surprised to hear it. I've heard other people saying similar things, but the research isn't quite there yet.
Yeah. What about you, Jim Gordon? Are you surprised to hear what Jan just expressed there?
Well, I think it makes sense. And what the studies that that Sarah Lazar and others are doing is showing a significant decrease in stress and showing the areas of the brain that would seem to promote resilience and decrease fear and apprehension are changing in a positive direction. So one of the worst things about any kind of injury, including head injury, is the level of anxiety and confusion and distress that comes up. So it just makes logical sense, and I think it's one of those next areas for research.
Interesting. Let's take another caller, and thank you, Jan, for that call. Kevin from Jamaica Plain is calling. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, hi, Anthony. Great to be on the air.
Good. It's good to have you. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a social worker practicing in Jamaica Plain, and I work with adults with major mental illness in Dorchester, Roxbury, Mattapan, and Jamaica Plain, and have been running 12-week mindfulness groups and mindfulness-based stress reduction groups. And I've just anecdotally just seen incredible results from my clients. It's been phenomenal. Especially just in seeing just increase impulse control and their ability just to be focused and to stay in a room. We've started with 1 minute to 3 minute meditations and then moving up to 10 minutes or 15 minutes at a time. And these are adults with some pretty serious illnesses.
And Kevin, do you get resistant when you propose meditation for these people? Do you get resistance initially, and people who might say, "I've tried it; it doesn't work." What do you tell them?
Well, in fact, most of the population I work with have really never tried it before. Hmm. Although there is some resistance in terms of, you know, is this religious? Is there something, you know, what's going to happen to me? What's this like? And what I basically tell them, it's basically as simple as just breathing and focusing on what you're doing and being present. It tends to, I mean, a couple people typically drop out near the beginning because it is something that's a bit scary to be with oneself at first.
Well, thanks for that.
What I've seen, oh, can I just ask one question?
Yeah, sure. Please ask away, Kevin.
Sure, because some of the clients I work with do have schizoaffective disorder and schizophrenia, and I've seen some remarkable results with them, but I also know that at times it's contraindicated. So I'm really curious as to what people think about working with meditation and adults with schizophrenia.
What do you think? Is that a question for you, Jim Gordon, that you can tackle?
I'm happy to respond. One of the things that's important to realize is that mindfulness meditation is a wonderful and powerful kind, but it's only one of three basic kinds of meditation. There's also concentrative meditation, which is much more involved with focusing, and there's also expressive meditation, shaking and dancing and moving the body. So different people respond better to different kinds of meditation. When we teach meditation, whether it's to U.S. soldiers returning from Iraq and Afghanistan, or to people with serious psychiatric illness, or to people with chronic physical illness, we use several different kinds, and we teach them. And what we've discovered is that some people prefer one, and some people prefer another. We always teach a deep breathing technique, we always teach mindfulness, and we always teach expressive techniques. And by doing that, we found that we can reach many more people. So, for example, people who the caller was describing, who may be very disturbed and kind of wander off in their internal world kind of and may feel very chaotic at times, sometimes for those people, very active physical meditations help to bring them into the here and now, help them to be more present, whereas some of the quiet meditations are disturbing to them. Hmm. And incidentally, I write about all of these in my new book, Unstuck, Your Guide to the Seven-Stage Journey Out of Depression, because I think it's possible for people to experiment with different kinds and learn the different kinds and choose, sometimes with guidance and sometimes on their own, which one works best. Hmm.
Sarah Lazar, I want to ask you, again, you know, we've been talking about the study that you did. It sort of confirms what we've known. Meditation is good for us. Where does the study lead to, for example? Does it lead to other ways that might further medical research or even research around certain medicines or certain treatments?
Right. So, excuse me. I think the data really helps support the use and integration of meditation-based therapies for certain patient populations. So it's well known that the hippocampus and the amygdala function are altered in numerous psychiatric populations. And so this suggests that, that the data helps suggest that meditation may be useful for those patient populations.
I see. Let's take one more call, or at least one more call. Jeffrey from Framingham is calling. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi there. Hi, all. Thanks for taking the call. I'm calling to ask two questions and also to, if I have a moment, to make a comment. There are different kinds of meditations, as your psychiatrist guest suggested. There are breathing, there are imaging strategies, and there are also meditations such as a Taoistic circular meditation, which is also a form of imaging common with breathing.
Right.
Myself, I have been doing Tai Chi Chuan for the past 30 years and started with as a martial arts and then went into it now as a health and meditative form, and have come to a point where I'm seeing that it appears that the doing of Tai Chi Chuan makes a structural change in the body and affects what's called qi or energy or prana, that kind of electrical subsurface motion, and it actually does structurally affect it. With myself, I had a nerve damage that caused a foot drop. That is, I couldn't lift my the front part of my foot.
Sure. Jeffrey, and only because our time is growing very, very short, you said you had a question, if you want to...
Okay, the question is... Yes, sorry.
That's okay.
The question is, do they parse out the various kinds of meditation and to see what effect that does have in the results that they are stating? Does...
Sure. Well, let me put that question to Sarah Lazar. You focused on one kind of meditation, correct, in the study?
Correct. Well, we studied mindfulness-based stress reduction, which actually combines yoga, breath awareness meditation, and a body scan. But it is an interesting question, and it's something we want to do in the future, is to do studies with different types of meditation. And we suspect that there'll probably be some structures that are common to all forms of yoga and meditation, but the other regions will be unique to the different practices.
Hmm, great.
I also think that the studies that you're doing are really important, and as the caller's suggesting, it'd be very interesting to see which kinds of meditation, which kinds of practices were most appropriate for which kinds of people with which kinds of conditions. And then, because I think that we really do need this kind of evidence, and it's very powerful, and people also need to understand that there are going to be differences for different people. And I think that the kind of research you're doing can show that in a very striking way.
Let me read something from our website. Jeremiah writes, and this sort of gets to the point that I think Jeffrey was making, for which I'm grateful, and some of the points that have already been made here. I feel like I get the benefits of meditation when I run and get into my zone. Do those who practice classical meditation agree that it's not only through sitting that this lovely state can be achieved? Jim Gordon?
I don't think we should be dogmatic about it. There are thousands of different ways of meditating, and all the ancient scriptures show that. And I think the issue really is what is most appropriate, not for somebody to say to you this is or is not meditation. It's really a question of you will know by the outcome. And the kind of research that Sarah Lazar and others are doing will help us to see what the outcome is of doing different kinds. This is not a matter of dogma. It's a matter of experimentation in science.
Mm. I'm glad for that point.
I'd like to say something about that, though. Because I know, I mean, I ran for years before I started doing yoga and meditation. And I really feel like there's a big difference for me between running and meditation and yoga. And I know other people who, I have a good friend who is a meditator. He's also an amateur musician. And I asked him this question once, because I get that question a lot. Like, oh, I play music, isn't it the same? And he says, no, he really feels it's different. And I really think that there is, you know, definitely exercise can put you into a nice flow state, and music can put you in a nice flow state, but I really feel like there's something very fundamentally different between real, true meditation and these other practices, which are just flow states.
You know what I would suggest, though, is that it's possible to do many activities, including physical exercise, in a meditative way, and that might be an interesting study. It's clearly different from trying to get a result and trying to make something happen, being tense about it, is clearly very different than doing whatever it might be, whether it's running or yoga or Tai Chi, in a meditative way.
Hmm. Raj Huli, I don't want to leave you out over there, but I'm just curious to know, what kind of meditation did you do in the study, and have you stuck with it, or have you experimented with different kinds of meditation?
No, actually, whatever I learned, the meditation techniques in the research study, that's sort of I tried to follow, and I stick with it.
Hmm. And this is this mindfulness meditation program.
Mindfulness-based meditation technique,
right, yeah.
And it was 20 to 40 minutes of sitting and meditating or doing slight mindful movement. It was about learning to be mindful. You know, we have all these thoughts bothering us, taking away from where we are, and it just pulls it back and, you have that centered sense of being present at that current moment.
Yeah.
And I would just add, based on what I wrote on the website, that it has more... After meditation, the effect is more longer than running. I run too for an hour and a half, two to three times a week. But meditation has longer lasting effects, I think, if you can add to it, Sarah.
Would that be one of the key differences, Sarah?
Again, there's no research on that, but
right.
Yeah.
So what's next in terms of your research on this?
Right. So we would like to start looking at long-term effects. So follow people not just for 8 weeks, but look 6 months later. Also looking at patient populations and looking at other of the supposed benefits of meditation. So other than stress reduction, what can it do?
Well, and Jim Gordon, we literally have 10 seconds left, but you've been at this business for a long time, and it just seems like as the years go by, we're sort of reminded again and again and again that this stuff has legs, and we just keep learning that again and again. Are you encouraged by research like this?
I'm very encouraged. And one of the things I want to say is that at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, as we go to places now in Haiti, for example, or with U.S. military, but in Haiti, we're finding tremendous receptivity to meditation and to different forms of self-expression and to becoming more mindful.
Well, Jim Gordon,
people there come to it very naturally, and I think it's going to be a national program in Haiti. I hope it will be someday in the U.S. as well.
Well, good luck to you, and thanks so much for coming in. Appreciate it. That's Jim Gordon. He's the director of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. He's also the author of Unstuck, Your Guide to the 7-Stage Journey of Depression. And Sarah Lazar, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
She's a neurobiologist at Mass General Hospital and the lead author of the study which looked at people's brains by MRI before and after 8 weeks of meditation. And one of the subjects was Raj Huli, who also joined us today. Thanks very much, Raj, for coming
thanks
in.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to our callers. We'll be right back after a short break. Up next, a century after its American debut in Boston, the Abbey Theater returns with a new production. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And this is Radio Boston.